Good afternoon, everyone. Oh, I was hoping that Andrew would not reset the clock since Jay talked 4 minutes less than he could have. I could have used it. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. In this presentation, what I'd like to do is tell you about supply management. You might have heard about it. I'll tell you a little bit more about our organization, how we're structured, a bit about the dairy sector in this country. But most of the presentation will be about supply management, our quota system in dairy, and hopefully some of you may have some misconceptions about what it is. I'll be able to clarify that. If not, you have to come and see me at the coffee break, and I'll redo the whole presentation again. Et ceux qui parlent français, ça me fera plaisir, si vous avez des questions, aussi de vous voir lors de la nutrition ou du break pour pouvoir vous l'expliquer. So moving right away, Dairy Farmers of Canada is basically the voice of Canadian dairy farmers. So we represent milk producers, financed by milk producers. We're a non-profit organization, and as a federation, we regroup 10 provincial producer marketing boards, as well as dairy farmers associations. All our farmers in this country have a quota, which I will explain very briefly. I won't get into too much detail, but I will try to give you an idea of how we work. We also have the genetic side, the breed association, through the Canadian Dairy Network. All our board of members are elected dairy producers, and we are financed through either membership or checkoff, approved by producers, and we have an annual budget of about $75 million. We're structured as an organization in different activities. We have about 75 employees. We do a lot of the marketing, national marketing, so promotion on television and marketing programs. We do nutrition education in schools. We do school milk programs. We also have policy and strategic planning, which is the lobby side of the organization in Ottawa. We do government relations and communication, which is also part of the lobby, as well as internal and external communications. We have a department for international trade, mostly dealing with trade negotiations, such as the World Trade Organization or the CETA, the right now, which is popular here, about the European and Canada trade agreement, as well as the operations. We're involved in a number of programs, which I won't go through the whole list, but such as on-farm health programs, food safety program, which we call Canadian Quality Milk. We do a $12 million research programs as well, both in nutrition as well as in environment. We have environmental programs and so on. Whoops, and so on. Everybody's been talking about Canada and where we are and so on. We're a big country, 9.2 million square kilometers. That's huge. And this is where the population, this is a bit older. We're about 36 million Canadians, but the census data is not out yet. So in 2006, 34 million spread across the country. Basically, two-thirds of our population are within 100 kilometers from the U.S. border. So even though we're a big country, we have a fairly good concentration towards the south. And probably not to your surprise, we have a bit less than a million cows, and they're pretty much where the population is. But we do have cows in all provinces, so there is a milk production in all part of the country with high concentration in Quebec and Ontario and central Canada, which is also where the bulk of the population is. So a bit on the economics of the dairy sector. Jack was, after what I heard from Jack, I wasn't sure I wanted to present this slide, but we have 13,000 dairy farmers. We produce about 84 million hectoliters of milk, which is representing farm sales of $6.1 billion annually. This is in Canadian dollars. We have 452 processing plants, but the reality is that 15% of those plants are owned by three large companies who receive 80% of all the milk, Saputo, Parmalat, and Agropur. So we have a lot of these 452 plants. Our very small cheese plants, artisanal cheese, we produce over 500 different variety of cheese. You'll have a chance tonight to sample some of them. And this is how our structure is. Moving along, I didn't want to go too much into the history and all this, but I think it's important to know that we've moved from relatively small farms over the years with a high level of rationalization of our dairy industry. The supply management was introduced in 1970. That's where we started at the national level in any case. And we've seen a decline in the rationalization of the farmers, so we were losing about 10%, then 5% during the 80s and the 90s of the farmers every year were leaving the industry, and the farm were getting bigger. But we're now down to 2%. In other words, the size of farms on average, which is about 76, 77 cows, milking cows, are at a farm at a level or size where you basically transfer the business. You don't sell and dismantle the farm and move to something else. So we see now that a much lesser rationalization because of the size of the farms that we have on average. Our cow are well known, mostly Holstein, although this is an average for all breeds, of about 9,700 liters per year. So we have very high producing cows. We, on average, employ three people. There's about three people employed on a dairy farm. In Canada, we're mostly Holstein cows, Canadian Holstein. We mostly have tie-stall barns, although I would say that most of the new barns tend to move to free-stall. So this number is still very important, but it's slowly being reduced every year. So supply management. I don't want to go too far, I'm not that old, but a little bit like Jack was saying, we developed an industry where we had very local dairy farms having a very local dairy cooperative producing the fresh milk for the liquid market, and some dairy co-op would do butter. So we had a two system. We had the fresh milk, very local fresh milk for drinking, and what we refer to as industrial milk, which is not a real nice term, but basically milk that would be processed into yogurt, butter, cheese, ice cream, and so on. And this is how the industry structure was. And the farmers were then organized later on into provincial boards that had mostly jurisdiction over the fluid, the drinking market. And there was a huge price differential between the fluid market, the farmers who were producing for the fluid market, and the farmers who were producing for the industrial market. Huge quality difference between those two milk as well. The requirements were quite different. Interestingly enough, in the 60s, in the 50s and the 60s, we had a huge export market. We're a large exporter of cheddar cheese to the UK primarily, which we completely lost, almost completely lost, except for a couple of thousand tons in the 1960s when the UK joined the EEC at the time. So the industry since that time was very much more focused domestically. However, we were not structured, and other than for the fluid milk, the returns to the farmers were pretty bad in terms of the bulk of the production. In 1966, the government created the Canadian Dairy Commission, which is a Crown corporation, with basically the mission to organize the markets between the provinces, as well as ensure that the returns of farmers would be fair. At that time, we also had a consumer subsidy, which was paid to the farmers as a direct payment, as a means of maintaining what the government, what we all refer to as the cheap food policy of the time, which was trying to keep the price to consumers relatively low. Now, our system is a quota system, and at least those of you in Europe, you would know what this is, but it's quite different than the other quota system. When we introduced it in 1970, the price were extremely low, and in fact, we were not self-sufficient. We had a fairly low production. We were importing quite a bit. And there was more quota, and this is just the quota was issued, not production. So in the 70s, we put a lot of quota as an incentive for farmers to increase their production. But there was no additional income linked to it. Well, the only link that they had was a subsidy. So the subsidy from the government was then linked to your holding of the quota if you produce the milk. And for 5 years, as all the provinces were joining in, we didn't really affect production very much. We're still lagging behind, and we're putting more quota than needed in the system until 1975, when the government decided to have a pricing formula for industrial milk that would actually reflect the actual cost of production of efficient farmers and would index it within a 5-year policy. Now, 1975 is an interesting year. Production went up in 1 year by 22%. 1 year. Now, many people say that's impossible. It happened. And it was interesting talking, listening to Jay and Jack about feeding the world. 1 year, 22% increase. You create a good economic environment, you'll have the food production. And that's, I'm not disagreeing with anything that was said, but that's a proof of that. And that's the first time that we had to cut the quota. So every producer's quota was cut by 18% in 1976 because we had created a surplus. And I'm not going to go through the rest of it, but our system is a quota to the producers that is very much linked to demand. And therefore, if demand goes up or demand goes down, the quota of the producers is adjusted automatically so that we don't overproduce. And the way the quota is adjusted is we measure demand. We deduct imports, and imports in this country, even though they're controlled, is about 7% of the demand. So we are a net importer of dairy products, even though we're under supply management. And then we decide a quantity that needs to be produced. Then we have an agreement between the provinces, the provincial marketing boards, and they deal with each of the individual producers. Now, in this country, each individual producer has a daily quota. He knows how much he can produce every day. There's no beginning of the year and end of the year. It's a continuous quota on a daily basis. And he has a bit of a margin on top and a bit of a margin on below. But it's a very precise system. And it changes every 2 months. As demand is adjusted, if there's a 2 months of increases or 2 months of decreases, it automatically triggers a changes in the quota, either up or down. Now, supply management is based on three pillars. And these three pillars that I will review very quickly are very much interlinked. You cannot have one without the other. One is the discipline. Production discipline is where the farmers will actually produce no more than demand and be fully responsible for any surpluses. This is not relying on government for that. So if you produce more, you're responsible for it. In exchange, you have predictable imports. You cannot have this determination of demand unless you know exactly how much imports will be there. So how much of that market you're losing towards imports so we can actually plan production properly. And the government deal is that we will have a system that will offer producers a fair return so that they can actually control production. Now we have one quality milk. So we've gone a long way from the 60s and the 70s. We have a daily quota, as I just explained. We have regional pooling since the mid-90s. In other words, the provincial system has merged where the farmers take all the market returns within the region, the West, and I'll keep it the West and the East, Ontario and East, are the two pools. And the farmers get all the same return. And national markets, we're also having and moving now in discussion into a national pooling so that we don't have this west, east, west, or central Canada system. One big advantage over these years, and this is seasonality. Now, we have several months of winter. We're not a grassland-based production like you would see in New Zealand or Argentina or some other countries, obviously. And we spend a lot of efforts trying to have production year-round. We have achieved that. There's huge benefits for this. Benefits at the processing level. We used to have plants that would have 100% capacity over capacity because they needed to deal with the peak. Now they can go at 85-90% capacity. And that's a huge saving in terms of economies. Predictable imports. Now, we used to have import controls that the government just implemented. We've had that since the 40s. As a result of the WTO-Uruguay round, when the WTO was created in 1994, or 95, 94, we transferred everything into a tariff-free quota. About 5% of the products on market is imported tariff-free. As I said, we import about 7%, but most of our imports are tariff-free. I mean, we have this agreement with the U.S. A lot of it is imported from the U.S., so it's quite a bit free. And our over-quota tariffs are to discourage imports in terms of the access we've been given. Our tariff tends to be over 200%, or around 200%, and there's a big debate as to how horrible this 200%. Now, why would you need 200% tariff? And this is why. So the red line is the Canadian price plus a tariff. So if I put my 200% over my price over all these years, this is where I'm at. And the rest is the world price. Now, the world price is going up, and our price, as a major trend, is going up. But the fluctuation is absolutely huge. And the difficulty this creates is that this high volatility, dairy being one of the most volatile agricultural products on the world market, is that you create disruption in the marketplace, huge disruption. So we're trying to prevent being caught in those valley so that you will all of a sudden have a huge, very short-term, huge amount of import that will disrupt the whole market and then try to go back to a stable system. The fair price to farmers, what we do is a cost survey. So every year there is a cost of production survey, a random survey of producers, randomly selected producers, and representative. And that survey established a target price. Now, the target price is then used to different classes. We have a different prices for each of the products. So the provinces then establish different prices for fluid milk and yogurt and cheese and so on, and negotiate that with the processing industry. And if they agree, so it's regulated. If they don't agree, they may go in front of an arbitration or a government commission. And they will resolve the issue, and eventually the price is regulated so that the processors for each production or product will pay the same price. Now, the one thing that we're very proud about, and I think stability is the issue here. It's not about free trade and not free trade. It's about being in a very volatile environment and trying to create a stability so that the investments at the farm level, at the industry level, can actually be successful. The red line is the Canadian price over the last 5 years. It's very stable. It's going up slowly. The green one is Europe. This is the farm price. And the blue one is the U.S. As an index, in the end, the index is higher for the European and the U.S. But they've had gone through huge peaks and valley. And this is where our system is good, is because we don't have this thing. And it creates an impact into the whole food chain, and the whole supply chain, which I will show you in a second. You're all going to ask me, many people, and I put this slide purposely, people are saying, oh yeah, but you all pass on, you don't get subsidy from the government, you don't get direct payments, government's not investing any financial assistance in our system, but you charge it to consumers. Yes, it's true. That doesn't mean that our consumers pay more than other consumers in other countries. Of course, now they do. We have an extremely strong dollar. And if you look in 2011, you know, there's about 25-30% differences in price. And that's usually, you know, I'm talking to journalists here, that's usually where the journalists all jump on us. Look at that, 25% more expensive in Canada than in the U.S. for dairy products. In fact, most everything is more expensive these days in Canada than in the U.S., whether it's clothing or shoes or whatever. But we had 10 years, same system, same price stability, where we had up to 40% cheaper in Canada than in the U.S. Not a lot of press at that time, I can assure you. That information was there. We were not glorified in any way, shape, or form. So, because of what you've seen, the volatility in the U.S. prices and our stability, there will be time where the price will be cheaper in the U.S., and there will definitely be time where the price will be cheaper at consumer in Canada, and the history is there to prove it. The other thing about stability that is important is that we've seen that in Europe, actually. When you start having high volatility, when the price goes up 100% and 6 months later goes down by half, you shouldn't expect your retailers to actually price in the same way as the world market goes, because that makes no sense. If you sell to consumer, if you're marketing a product to consumer, you're not going to double the price for 6 months and then cut it up by half for another 6 months and keep doing this. So you reduce that fluctuation. You'll pass on some, but you'll reduce it. And then what you do is, because you have then a higher risk, you increase your margin. And yes, we have a higher price as farmers, but we also have a higher share of the consumer dollars than most any other countries have. We have been maintaining about 63% of the farm returns. 63% is coming to the farmers from the retail price, from the consumer dollar. And you don't see that in other countries. And I think that's because we're stable. We increase the price only once a year when we do the adjustment based on cost changes. And the retailer now just do it, the processor do it, they all do it at the same time, and therefore we have maintained the stability of maintaining that share of the consumer dollars over all these years. And that's a very key element that is not often talked to about supply management. Why do we have still supply management? You say, well, you guys are like a dinosaur or something. You know, don't you get it? Globalization and free trade and all this that everybody's talking about? What the heck are you doing with marketing boards and quota system and import controls? Well, first of all, because 13,000 farmers, three buyers, that gets 80% of the milk, where's the leverage unless you regulate it? You have no leverage unless you regulate it. This is not economy 101, where you have an equal share of the supply chain and everybody has the same equal power. Then you have a true balance in the system. We don't have that in this industry. And therefore, you need to have some powers given to the farmers to be able to achieve their return. Otherwise, they will be the one that will accept all the changes in the world, in the world prices, will be passed on to producers, as we've seen, and they have no chance of doing it. Same concentration at the retail level. Three major retailers supply 65% of all the food in this country. So your leveraging in terms of negotiation is almost non-existent. There is no cost for the government. We're not spending our time with asking for money or support or stabilization payments or whatever, and I'm not blaming anybody else from doing it, but we're not there. So if you wonder why is the government still supporting it, what's the alternative? What's the alternative? Getting rid of us where it costs nothing and consumers are not complaining about the price, where things are stable and there is no cost to government or taxpayers? If you don't like the price as a consumer, you just buy something else, right? To what? To disrupting the whole system, opening the border, having high fluctuation, having farmers to be subsidized some form, decoupled or otherwise. That's not a good alternative, and that's exactly why there's a lot of support for it. This is just statistics. I don't think I'll go into this. We said pretty much that. I wanted to just, this is a plug, go to our site, dairyfarmers.ca, easy to remember, dairyfarmers.ca, and if you want more information about the historical perspective of our industry, our evolution, what it means from an economic standpoint, how it works, you'll have all kind of information on this particular site. So I welcome you to go there. Doesn't mean that, well, I'm trying to portray some really good picture, and I think we have a good story to tell. We do have challenges. There's no debate about this. And our challenges is the fact that we have limited growth. We're now a mature industry. We don't export because we're limited to our export capacity or export very little. And therefore, we look at population growth, and basically our estimates is we can see a growth of 1% per year. And that's the kind of level of growth that we've seen, and that's the level of growth that the quota has had over the years. And of course, for companies or even farmers now that the rationalization is very small, who wants to, you know, double their sizes and so on, if another farmer is not leaving, you're limited in having that growth, and that puts pressure on the system. The same for the processing industry. It's so concentrated now with three big players that there's not a huge amount of investment because of lack of growth, and therefore most of our players or our three large companies are investing in other countries as a means of, you know, exporting or having growth in terms of their exercise, although they're making most of their profits here. We have a diverse Canadian population, and therefore, you know, there's also the ethnic issue that comes in. A lot of Asians, they don't. So we have a lot of promotion to do in terms of the different food habits for dairy products in particular, and that's a challenge that we're trying to meet. And trade liberalization, of course, all these trade negotiations, although we've been successful in protecting supply management, or our government has been successful, is always a huge challenge that the industry has to face and continue to fight for or against, depending which way you look at it. And that's always something we put a lot of efforts year after year. The WTO negotiation, I'm seeing my time is almost up, so I'll go very quickly. We're not against the Doha Round, but we're not in favor of what the Doha Round basically proposed. For the same reason, you see, I mean, you cut the over quota by 23%, all it will do is reduce the returns to the farmers, because you will pass on every time, you will have instability. It won't increase trade whatsoever, because you will adjust the price down. And therefore, you'll have no more access. You can give access, 6%, and that's fine, over a period of time, which is probably, you know, a bit faster than the type of growth, of new growth that we see as an industry. But the trade is going to be in a lower income market. So you will increase trade in a market that will be depreciated because you reduce the tariffs. We don't see this as a win-win for everybody. And we don't see the purposes, particularly since our consumers are not complaining about the situation whatsoever. For us, though, it means that if this round was to be completed with the current text, our farmers could lose $1 billion in income, which is 20% of their income right now. So if there's a lot of efforts, and you keep hearing in the WTO and all these trade negotiations how Canada is always talking about supply management, there's a reality behind this as well. I run out of time, so I'll skip that. I'll just finish with this. I have three of my staff, much better looking than I am, that are here with you all week. So if you have any questions, please do not hesitate. They are very familiar with our system. They will be more than happy to help you and give you any information you want, or statistics or whatever. And I welcome you to be in contact with them. They'll be pleased to help you in any way. Thank you very much.